Chanting. Very nice, Ina. Thank you. Today I want to talk about Sesshin practice because this is our first day of our big Sesshin of the year. And my main message, my basic message is, I'll quote from a traditional source. It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. What do I mean by that? It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. I wonder what Ellington meant by that. It doesn't have any importance. It doesn't have any meaning. It's not important. It has no consequence if it doesn't have that swing. It's really easy to go through the motions and coast your way through this. You can find that niche. I've done it before. I know how to do this. I know how to get through this. I miss the whole thing. Breaks my heart. I see it every year. And I love Zen so much, and it's so important to me that you get it. So what is that swing? Body and mind thoroughly committed completely to what you're doing. Whole body and mind. To be in the swing of Sesshin is to dive in completely. Not some tepid partial acceptance. I'll go along with this but not that. I really need to have my cell phone on. Or the various other ways that we escape from ourselves in this short little tiny piece of your life that you've given over to this. Being in the swing, body and mind. Not having to be the best at what you do. Not having to hide and not be seen either. They're both just different faces of the same ego energy. I want to be seen. I don't want to be seen. And all the resentments that arise, like these little demons in our minds. Can you take correction? Generally, we don't ask people to have very difficult learning positions early on because, you know, the way we teach in Zen is just, well, start and then we'll correct you until you get it right, until it's in your body. Because you really can't explain it. I mean, talk for 2 hours about it, but until the moment is right and you really hear that space between the bell and the next bell, the bell and the drum. When your body knows that you can wait a moment to return a bow, you don't have to scurry off. Then you begin to truly practice Sesshin. This is really a lot about our bodies. Well, our bodies are our minds. They're the embodiment of our minds. Our minds are just these TV sets. What channel are you listening to? A theme of this whole Ango is the great teacher, the great Rinzai Japanese teacher, Hakuin Ikkaku. He was a great artist, calligrapher, and a rather crazy Zen master. Yoko came yesterday and with great surprise said, "This Hakuin, he's insane." Exactly. Let's all get insane. He revived the Rinzai school in Japan when it was kind of like getting kind of corrupt and logi, and refocused it in very rigorous ways. And so basically my message this Ango is, let's refocus our community. Be a little bit more aware of the importance of our practice for our life. It's not just something, some place we go hang out some Sundays. It's really our life. And that of those we serve, our families, those with whom we have affinity. Although Hakuin was noted for his rigor, you will find the soft butter meditation in Wild Ivy, if you've been reading it, which for me is the one that I give to people who are really going over the edge. And you'll find that he quotes Dogen quite a bit. So the simplistic view from the West of the relationship between Soto and Rinzai should crumple a little bit as you read Wild Ivy and realize that we're talking about the same practice with different aspects of it, and we need different aspects at different times. Fortunately for us, our line is both lines. I have the transmission in both the Rinzai and Soto school. So that's my title. Roshi is really a Rinzai title, Inca title. Just means old teacher. You know, we Westerners turn these kind of humbling phrases into something exalted. It just means someone who's gone through the koan's tradition many times. So we have that, and then we have our profound study of the Soto school, the Shikantaza, the just sitting, the powerful practice that Dogen brought. So we're very fortunate. Maizumi Roshi was brought up in a Soto household. Both his father was a Soto priest, bishop. His mother was the daughter of a Soto priest who had a large temple. But Maizumi Roshi, when he went off to college, went to a Rinzai and lived in a Rinzai home with Kori Roshi's home and studied in that tradition. And also was a translator for Yasutani Roshi, who grew up in a Rinzai tradition and then ordained in the Soto. So you see, the lines cross over all the time. But I really wanted us to get a sense of Hakuin this year during this whole month-long study. And all the teachers will be talking about him in the next few days. But I wanted us here to really get a sense of that vigor that Hakuin offers to us. So we're here on our long retreat, our long Dai Sesshin, big Sesshin. Bragging already, we're doing a Dai Sesshin, not just an ordinary one. And it's more traditional than our city practice. So you notice the little things, like, you know, in the city, the bell rings, we get up. Here, the bell rings, and you kind of like, you do like the old instructions from the old days are. You take a couple of 2 or 3 minutes to very slowly bring your body back to ordinary awareness before you stand. So everything is a little bit different here. And we can actually let go of some of our protective coding here. We are in a very safe little community. So we can let some of our defenses down. And we can thereby learn much more than we can in our city sangha, where people are coming and going and it's difficult to correct people or to keep the form crisp. So we kind of relax it a little bit in the city. Here, we're quite formal in the structures, actually. You know, you may notice that we call people by their roles, not by their names. Particularly when we're correcting. So we might say, Eno, faster, Eno. We don't say Koshin, honey. We just speed it up a little. So we call people by their roles. Go on. Jikido. That might help you a little bit if you're being corrected a lot. And here's one, our Shuso, Fugan. He is a spokesperson for the Sangha at this time. He is what we call our head monk. So his role is to model. Got that? Model practice, to exemplify sincere effort, service, humility, practice. So that's why he sits up at the front. He's been selected to play this role for us during this period. And it's not been easy for Fugan because he doesn't live in New York City. When I first met Fugan, he lived in Massachusetts, in Boston area, Cambridge area. Big dreads hanging down. Played in some music in some rock and roll band or something. And kind of a suspicious guy, but kept showing up and sat hard and seemed to know his way around, had practiced in the Korean Zen tradition and also in Thich Nhat Hanh's tradition. So although he may not be known to a lot of you, he's been here as a resident for the entire Ango for the last 4 or 5 years. So he's known very much to those of us who are here, who come here in the summer. And I would say he has a little affinity for Zen. So we thought we'd go ahead with it. Poking a little fun at Fugan now. So the Eno here, his job, or her job, is to set the pace, set the pitch, keep things moving in the chanting and in the services, keep the services going. So he's actually following instructions from a meeting that we had at the beginning about how we would like this session to go. So you might have a particular different idea about how you might like the chanting to go. Maybe you'd like it to go more slowly. But he's the Eno. He's the person who has that job. So it might be difficult for you to let go of your idea of how it should be done. But I suggest that that's the practice here. Is, let go of my idea of it and just open myself and allow the Eno to do his work. So one of the practices of Sesshin is simply to listen to the Eno, how he's setting the pace for the chanting. Now the liturgy master, who this year is Chodo, if you have a question about liturgy, you can consult him, and his decision about how things are going goes, regardless of the fact that you may have heard something different from me for the past 25 years. And don't come telling me about it. He's the liturgy master for this time. The monitors this year, Seicho-san and Chodo-san, they take care of everything happening in the meditation hall. So it's good to let them know if you can't make it for a period of sitting or if something is coming up. These are the people to speak to. They are in charge of the quality of our meditation, of our zazen. Don't need to speak to anyone else. Or Fugan, being the head monk, can be seen on any of these issues. And then, of course, there's the Tenzo, Tokyu, and Seijin. And they run the kitchen. It's really, they have a big responsibility and do a wonderful job. Please don't interfere with what they're doing. Don't argue with them about the particular recipe you've been asked to follow. This is only a month of your life. See if you can manage that. And the jishas are responsible for access to the teachers rather than the teachers themselves. So that would be Gotoku and Suisho are responsible for access to the teachers. Now why am I going to all this trouble to explain it all to you? Because we're making something here. We're making that swing, that matrix, that allow each of us to discover what Hakuin talks about in his Song of Zazen. Boundless and free is the sky of samadhi, bright the full moon of wisdom. Truly, is anything missing now? Nirvana is here, before your eyes. This very place is the lotus land. This very body is the Buddha. If we could really, just for a moment, glimpse that, if we really could, we wouldn't need any more words. We wouldn't need this whole matrix. But we need it. We need these things in order to get in the swing. So, what about your roles, those of you who have not been pointed to? Are you a guest in a Zen camp or a Zen spa? A mind camp? Or are you a trainee? That's the word they use, the translation. A person being trained. Have you entered a training period? It's like when you send an athlete off to camp. Some qualities are necessary. Discipline, attention. We have to let go of our previous roles of being boss or director or husband or father, wife, mother, therapist. I have to let go of those things and become a trainee. I'm told it's hard to do, and everyone says it's hard to do. It's never been hard for me to do. I love to do that. I still, my idea of a great holiday is to go to some other tradition that I don't know anything about and be like a rank beginner. You know, at that Shivananda yoga place, you know, and they're correcting me and everything, and it's great. I don't know how to chant. I don't know what to wear. But I think the older we get, the harder it is for us to let go of these kind of ideas we have of ourselves, of our role, and therefore harder for us to learn something new. I think the best help for that is a sense of humor about yourself and the whole thing, what's going on. When I visited Daijoji in Kanazawa, the first time I visited there with Tamaki Myoju Kobayashi, there was a bunch of new hires from the Toyota plant. They were going to be working in the business section. And they were the motliest crew, these 10 guys, young, you know, probably just gotten their equivalent of their MBAs, and kind of absolutely not Zen types at all. And they had been sent for a week of sesshin at this monastery, which is what they did. They sent them. And I was really sorry I couldn't hang around and watch. Because they didn't look like they were scared to death, and they didn't know what to do. But why do you think that that's still a custom in Japan, to send people, new hires, to a Zen monastery? You know, that would be a good gig for the village Zendo. You should work on that, Fusu. We'll get some people to. Be fun, wouldn't it? To instill Zen characters, to give them some of the qualities of a Zen person, would be like, what could it be? Beginner's mind, humility, sense of service, stability, kindness. Beginner's mind has always been my favorite, because I taught creative work, creative art, for so many years at NYU. And it was just so patently obvious that those who were able to throw off what they knew and open themselves were the most creative people, that weren't following some old pattern, weren't clutching to some old known thing. So that's what we can do here to make this Sesshin swing, is to have a beginner's mind about it. Everything that we do, fresh. How marvelous. You know, if we could experience our life in that way, we wouldn't need all the crutches we have. We'd just be wildly enthusiastic, or insane, as we call it, alkaline. Oh, what's the next thing? And then there's humility, which I am on to this year a lot. It's an aspect I think we really need to work on. You know, in the West, there's always this concern about self-esteem. People that they should have their confidence in themselves, and I think a lot of times the incredible virtue of humility is lost. One of the things that attracted me to the whole Zen tradition, the whole aesthetic is humble. It's not gorgeous. It's simple. It's not about wealth. It's about poverty. The more you take away, the freer you are. It's marvelous. Often I encounter a Zen student who's had one really good period of Zazen, and now they're looking down on all the others, other people, because maybe they've passed a koan or had an insight or had a few years of zazen under their belt. It means nothing. Nothing at all. None of it means anything. So I just read this story in the London Review last week, and I can't resist. Some of you may know it. I just never heard it before. It's about an event that happened at Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. The rabbi stops the service and prostrates himself before the ark and cries out, "O Lord, I am nothing." And moved by this demonstration, the cantor throws himself on the ground and screams, "O Lord, I too am nothing." And then some tailor who's sitting in the last row of the synagogue cries out, "I too am nothing." And the cantor turns to the rabbi and says, "So look who thinks he's nothing." So just tuck that in. Next time you're feeling pretty big here around here, "I'm the humblest of them all." Yeah. So the final quality I wanted to talk about is affinity. I mean, if you think about it, we're all here in this boat together. Out of this entire world, the people in this room have chosen to be here, right? We are very similar. We have a connection, a karmic connection, even greater than all the people you might be on an airplane with or in a ferry boat crossing some river somewhere. And yet you will find during this session that all the demons that you have ever seen and encountered are actually here. In the way someone breathes, in the way someone walks, the way they grab their cup, or step on your toe, or spend a lot of time in the bathroom, or snore, or smell. Can you see that it's in your mind? Can you just try and remember who is really here? An earnest group of 35 people who desperately wish to realize their Buddha nature and thus serve and be compassionate with others. So when these goblins, these ones with horses' heads and cows' heads, come up in your mind, where are they? Are they really here? There's a great story about Hakuin. And since I'm the first speaker, I get to tell it because everybody's going to want to tell some funny, great story about Hakuin. This one is about a soldier who came to visit Hakuin. And he asked him, his serious question was, "Is there really a heaven and a hell?" You know, at that time, and when you read Hakuin's autobiography, you see that he was terrified of burning in hell. And that was like his primary motivating force from the time he was 7 years old until he was well into his 30s. He just was trying to get up, not have to burn in hell. So this was a key question at that time in the 17th century in Japan. Is there really a heaven and a hell? And Hakuin looked at the guy, the soldier, and says, "Who are you?" And the warrior replied, "I am a samurai." And Hakuin said, "You? A samurai? What kind of ruler would have you as his guard? Your face looks like a beggar's. And Nobushige immediately grabbed his sword and pulled it out. And Hakuin said, "So, you have a sword. That weapon is probably too dull to cut off my head." Nobushige picked up the sword, and Hakuin said, "Here, open the gates of hell." Nobushige dropped his sword and bowed. And Hakuin said, "Here, open the gates of heaven." It's all in our minds. And we really don't see that, except when we have the luxury of a 10-day session, that we can see that the whole play is going on in our minds. Where can you find that awareness? You know, when you go to a Japanese monastery, there's a great sign always in almost every monastery you go to, and it says, "Look under your feet. Look under your feet. Don't be looking anywhere for it." It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. It makes no difference if it's sweet or hot. You gotta give it the rhythm, everything you got. Billie Holiday said, "You can feel it, but you can't explain it." Do you dig me?